Hello and welcome to edition 267 of the NRF1 podcast, because Norfolk knows Formula 1. This is your F1 podcast straight out of Norfolk, UK. Today we are sat in the comfort of our own homes, bringing you our latest edition through the power of the internet. We're here to review the Belgian Grand Prix, because it's been a little while since we've done a podcast, Italy Part 1, which was at Monza, and then we're going to have a quick preview of Italy Part 2 as well, which is going to be at Mugello. As well as obviously catching up on all the latest news and gossip from the wonderful world of Formula One. Coming up, red-faced Ferrari, the end of an era, and midfield madness. I am Damon Hill Radical and blogger, as well as part-time host Richard Baxter. Joining me tonight is the ever-present, two times Beckles Kart champion, the Oracle, Kyle Cumbers.
Good evening. How are you?
You're doing, yeah, not bad. Thank you. Not bad. I'm a little bit coldy this week. I've got a little bit of a cold, so I'm battling through it to get the podcast done. So how are you? You good as well?
Yep, can't complain. All good.
Good. Also joining us is our own F1 fan from south of the border, also a previous host as well, and ever bullish Katie Sandals.
Good evening, chaps.
Good evening. You okay?
Yeah, not too bad. It's been a busy one, but great to be sort of back with you guys discussing some interesting racing.
Absolutely. I mean, what more could we need? We've got a lot to talk about, so we'll get straight on with it. we'll jump straight in to Spa, Belgium. Now, we haven't done a podcast in between, so sorry to all the listeners. We haven't done this as soon as we would have liked. But we'll do it now. Belgium, I mean, guys, what do you think of the race, first of all?
I usually enjoy Belgium. Belgium's my favourite track, and I think a lot of fans would say the same, but that wasn't the most exciting race I've ever seen.
Yeah, I would agree with that. What about you, Kyle? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I agree, yeah. I mean, yeah. It's always good to see F1 cars go around Spa. But it just, it was missing something. Just missing
It was missing rain. That's what everyone was saying, yes. And I think that could have added that extra sort of zhuzh to it.
I hate when they on Thursdays and Fridays, like commentators or whatever, talk about, oh, it's definitely going to rain on Sunday or this and that. It just doesn't happen, does it? It just when it rains, it seems to be unexpected in a weird way. And when it's guaranteed rain, it never comes. So
no, that's very true. And I mean, to be honest, this race was kind of dominated by the tyres again. The kind of soft compounds they used. They did a one-stop race. I think the vast majority of people one-stopped. And no one really wanted to do two stops. And the top three in the end were so nervous of like a Silverstone repeat with tyres failing and everything. They seemed to just kind of really drive quite slow at the end.
Seemed to suggest that it was a two-stop race. But kind of like I said, the teams at the front just seemed to be quite happy where they were, and just, well, we'll finish where we are. Mercedes 1-2, so they're kind of happy, and Verstappen's like, well, I'm third, it's probably the best I can get. Nobody seemed to want to risk it in a way, which is a bit disappointing.
No, that's very true. And something that always happens with Spa, we mentioned in the preview for that race how fast the race passes by. It seems to go in no time, 44 laps. I mean, another 10 laps of that race surely would have forced them into two stops. And I mean, Renault were looking pretty good outside of the top three. I think they had Daniel Ricciardo though in fourth place, and then I think Ocon got fifth place as well. I mean, they could have been challenging for a podium potentially as well.
Yeah, I think Verstappen was saying, Ricciardo was saying, if you've given me one more lap, because he was getting closer and closer. Verstappen's usually one to try and push and keep as far away as possible. So I thought it was a bit odd that he just kind of let it go. He seemed to know that Ricciardo was just enough behind him that he could get away with being slow. But yeah, it was interesting. But it's great to see Danny Rick up there in, fourth place, highest Renault finish all season. So, he's a quality driver. He just hasn't had the car to back him up of recent years. But yeah, it was a bit weird seeing Max kind of slow down so much. I say this especially as a Max fan, but yeah.
Definitely. And you mentioned there about kind of cars not up to scratch, basically. We have to go there. Ferrari. Now, they were slow. I mean, I don't know if you saw, I think Sky F1 showed it a comparison from Leclerc's lap or Vettel's lap from last year and then his lap from this year. And through Eau Rouge and Radeon, he was a little bit up, but then just down the straight, he just lost it all because the engine. It seems to not have any power. I mean, I'd love to see Alonso in that car just to hear him talk about GP2 engine and all that again.
GP3 engine. I mean. it was depressing. It was like quite early because Leclerc had a good start, didn't he, from memory, and he made a few places.
Yeah,
and then it was just lap after lap that just people were just driving by him, and it was just was he like he was in a GP2 car, and it was just like. Just proves, were they that badly cheating the last few years with their engine? For how slow they are this year, it's a huge step down, isn't it?
It really is, yeah. And we'll definitely come back to that later on.
Yeah, I think there was a really interesting graphic that showed the difference between speeds last year and this year. And everybody else had got massively quicker, you know, especially the Williams had got, you know, phenomenally quicker, and the only team that got slower was Ferrari.
Yeah, so no, that was definitely. I saw that same graphic, and that was really interesting to see that one. But yeah, like you say, everyone else improved apart from Ferrari, which is astonishing.
It's part of this new normal. I didn't realise that a slow Ferrari was going to be part of the new normal, but here we are. So many new things in this new normal, and a slow Ferrari is one of them.
Very true. And something we need to obviously touch on with the Belgian Grand Prix. There was quite a big crash not far into the race between Giovinazzi and Norfolk's own George Russell. It scared me watching it. I didn't see the race live because we were busy during the day. I was watching it about 10 p.m. In the evening afterwards, and I mean, it might have just been me in my tired state, but I thought that the crash was pretty scary and horrific to watch. What did you guys think? Or
oh yeah, definitely. And he seems to like a big crash there. Didn't he? He had a good sized crash last year, didn't he? So that was the last lap. He had a crash there, and not the same part of the track. I can't remember the exact part of the track, but. It snapped on him, and he sort of flew into the wall, and obviously then all the wreckage that unfortunately affected our own George Russell.
Yeah,
and I thought, sorry,
you go ahead.
I thought Russell's reaction was saying later about how he was really pleased that, you know, this is kind of why they had Halo. I thought that was a bit more telling perhaps of how he'd found that situation, how he'd interpreted it, because was it the wheel that came sort of flying towards him? I think you could see it from his on-board camera. I think that him sort of talking about that was quite telling, that it perhaps was just as scary as you were saying. But a sad state for Russell, but yeah, pretty damaging. Yeah,
And on that same subject, I don't know if you saw the radio message that Kimi Raikkonen sent out, but he was basically on the team radio talking about Giovinazzi, saying, oh, he's spun and crashed now. That's what he gets for not letting me past. So,
no love lost.
a bit unforgiving from Kimi there. But,
at least he checked he was all right first.
yeah, definitely. Sorry, I think that's... Kidding. That's a good quick touch on Spa. As you said, Kez, it's my favourite racetrack as well. So it's just a shame it wasn't an even better race, but still enjoyable, I thought. But we need to move on because we need to get straight stuck into this because there's so much to talk about. Monza. Now, what is it about these classic Formula One circuits that always seem to produce good racing? I mean, Silverstone gets it, Spa, most of the time we get it, Canada, we get it. Monza also just seems to be one of these classic racetracks we go to, and every time there's some good racing.
I think we were saying before, it's a bit of a tale of two races here. We got the Belgian Grand Prix where we had such high expectations, and it was like, oh. And then we go to Monza, it's like, oh, it'll probably be the same. And it's like, oh, this is very much not the same, which I think we saw from quali onwards. But yeah, what a difference a weekend makes.
Definitely. I mean, it all started in qualifying. I thought we were going to see a repeat of last year, to be honest, because there was, I think in Q2, they had a lot of the midfield teams out with the Williams as well. May have even been Q3, I can't remember, but they were fighting for position on track and basically no one improved.
There was that issue with everyone sort of sandbagging a bit, and obviously that tyre issue is coming up again, especially in quali. I think David Coulthard, I was listening to the Channel 4 coverage later, and was absolutely flabbergasted, you know, really upset about the way that the drivers were behaving, and, you know, said it was dangerous, basically.
Yeah, definitely. And I was watching it, and I was saying to my girlfriend, you know, it really winds me up because they've got a whole, you know, 18, 15, 12 minutes during qualifying. And I just kept saying, why would you not just go out a few minutes earlier just to get a clear run? I mean, you're not giving a slipstream to anyone else. You're not gaining one, but no one else is gaining one because no one wants to go first. So they're all losing time. So I was just saying, just do something different. Use the time that's there. They don't all need to go at the same time. And then I can't remember if it was Q2 or Q3, but Mercedes went and did it. And they went out with about 4 minutes left on the clock, so 2 minutes earlier than they usually do. And everyone else suddenly was panicking to get ready to go out and try and follow them. It just seemed crazy.
I just find it hilarious. You sort of, there's that camera angle looking down the pit lane, isn't it? And it suddenly hits whatever the time is, and then suddenly all these cars pop out at one time out of the garage. And I suppose there probably isn't an optimal time to be on the track, but that's probably even the track when you're by yourself. But obviously they're looking for that advantage, but there's no advantage when you've got the good possibility of you being held up.
Yeah.
I know that stadiums are that quick anyway, so they kind of doesn't really matter when they go out. But I just, yeah, it's mad to see them all head out and fight over the track. And yeah, at least they brought in that, was it maximum time you could spend on a warm-up lap?
Minimum time. But I think there was also a lot of laps being deleted as well. They were very strict on track limits as well on the Saturday. I think Albon had quite a few knocked off. They seemed a lot stricter on that than they've been in a long time as well, which I thought was interesting. But I guess if you're holding yourself up, each other up, and then your track time gets deleted anyway, then you've put yourself in even more of a situation where you've got this limited running time. So yeah, it mind boggles.
Was it Q1? Q1, they all looked pretty much racing down to the first corner. Was a metal was involved?
Yeah, I think yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It's like four or five of them just all together and pretty much racing down to the first corner. You're like, seriously, chaps, you know, sort it out.
But, yeah, definitely. And you mentioned Vettel then, and we need to go back to Ferrari because it's one of their home races in Italy. And again, contrast from last year. Last year they were winning the race, looking great. This year they were just, I was embarrassed for them. I'm not a big Ferrari fan, but I was embarrassed for them. It was astonishing what was going on there.
You think Vettel qualified 17th in a Ferrari in Monza?
Yeah.
That is a low, the low, isn't it? I won't, because I sort of predicted in the Belgian Grand Prix they wouldn't get through to, no Ferrari engine car would get through to Q3. And I'm quite surprised that actually came right. I thought that can't happen 2 weeks in a row. I wondered if they would just cheat to somehow do something just to get through and then worry about it later.
It's the fact that the two Alfa Romeos who have the same engine and the Haases as well managed to be, you know, getting ahead of a works Ferrari team, you know, car, and it's just, oh, it's crazy. We don't know what's going on for them. And I mean, as I said, you know, at the start of the podcast, coming up Ferrari red faced, they must be. They're so embarrassed. Their faces are going to be redder than their cars right now, especially going into their 1,000th Grand Prix at Mugello.
what I'd pay to be a fly on the wall in those meetings with Binotto at the moment. Like, just, it's, you know, when I grew up as a kid, you know, it was Ferrari winners every week. You know, I grew up in that kind of dominance of Schumacher, you know, with Barrichello always close behind. And to see them kind of fallen from grace so far, it just seems really weird and kind of unnatural for me as a fan. Like you, I'm not a big Ferrari fan, but to see a team that is, and it kept being sort of brought up on the coverage over the weekend, a team that is so iconic and so synonymous with the sport, to see them struggling so much, it just feels alien. And just nipping briefly back to Belgium, you were saying there about the Alfa Romeos finishing higher. Well, Kimi did finish that race at the highest of any Ferrari-powered car in his Alfa Romeo. Just, I don't know. We all knew it was going to be bad at Monza, but I don't think we realised quite how bad it was going to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're kind of having their own little Ferrari race, aren't they? The six Ferrari-engined cars are all kind of pretty much together and having their own race, and they've sort of invited Williams along as well for a bit of fun. But they're kind of having their own little race and
Formula Ferrari. The rest of the peg...
Ferrari, love it.
Just having a little Ferrari challenge as part of the F1 weekend. But it's just, I think that they were lucky in a way that all the press and all the stories were based on Gasly and the crazy second half of the race, because I think if it had been a pretty standard race, then I think the coverage would have all been on Ferrari, and yeah, it wouldn't have been pleasant for them.
Yeah, definitely. Now we'll get stuck into this, because we're speaking of Ferrari. Charles Leclerc had a massive crash at Parabolica, really went off, hit, you know, went into the barriers hard, and then safety car, and then the race was eventually red flagged. Now, first question. Now, as soon as I saw him go into the barriers, you could see that the tyre barriers was damaged. It would have to be rebuilt. The car was a long way into the barriers, so not an easy thing to recover. Why was the red flag not called sooner?
Mm-hmm. It's a good question. I think you always want to try and keep racing as much as you can. But perhaps they underestimated the level of damage that was caused there. Although it looked pretty obvious on the cameras. I don't know. You want to keep them out there if you can.
Do they? I wonder if they do wait for the marshals to let them know. I don't know if that's part of the sort of procedure. But it did look quite obvious that something was going to have to be done. Because it was pretty much the old school tyres, weren't they? And just a advertising bit in front, which not easy to sort out, but they probably just, even sometimes with safety cars, and you sometimes think, well, that's definitely going to be a safety car, and they wait a little bit longer than you think, so maybe just to,
they just need some,
something would happen. Yeah,
they need to, I'm sure that they're getting better than they used to be, but I think just some more kind of decision making on the spot, get it done. Because to me, it seemed an obvious red flag. I was shouting it at the telly while watching the race, because it just seemed like it. But that was only the beginning of things, because while the safety car was out because of the area where we also had another car break down, which was Kevin Magnussen, wasn't it, who broke down and triggered a safety car.
A Ferrari engined car.
Yeah, of course. So we had Hamilton and Giovinazzi both come into the pit lane. But the pit lane was closed. Now, you can't see me, but I'm doing closed in inverted commas. because it was very strange. They just, you know, there didn't seem to be any real danger apart from a car to the side of the track. But these two guys came into the pits when they weren't supposed to. And then they both got 10-second stop-go penalties. Now, this really ignited the race, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, do you think more should have been done to show that the pit lane was closed? Or
That was the controversial bit, wasn't it? Because I've not been aware of things like that happening before, but I think there was talk of, well, whereabouts should the guidance for that be on track? And the talk was, okay, there were signs, but they're right on the left hand side of the track, away from where the racing line was, away from the pit entrance itself. There was nothing on the pit itself to say, we're closed, you know, don't come in. Because I think it was all advertising boards. I think Coulthard was talking about this in commentary, you know, where is, he was desperately trying to think of somewhere on the driver's dash where they could see this notification, and then there wasn't anything specific. So I think it possibly was a bit harsh on Hamilton and Giovinazzi, unless they were definitely told by their team, you shouldn't have come in here, which didn't seem to be the case from the Hamilton radio that we heard later. So I think it was a bit harsh, but I'm also kind of glad it happened because it spiced things up a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it was very strange. And to me, it was just the teams have radios. Surely they're seeing the same message that everyone else is seeing, because the commentators could say, oh, we've got a message saying pit lane's closed, these guys have come in. Surely the teams get that same message, and surely they can jump on the radio and just say, stay out, pit lane closed. It doesn't take long, and I thought it was a bit kind of silly of the teams to not do that, to be honest.
I think Mercedes probably, I think they said it was 12 seconds from when the message went out until when Hamilton pulled in the pit lane. So, and apparently it's like there was like a one line on like the third or fourth screen of what they see on the pit wall, which I think you kind of get the impression are provided by the FIA. So maybe, I don't know if the FIA should sort of put like a big red cross on these screens or send us some sort of bigger message. But apparently it was some guy back in Brackley who saw it and then quickly went over the radio saying, look, the pit lane's closed, when Hamilton was already in. So I thought Giovinazzi was probably the weirder one there, wasn't it? Because he was quite long, I assume, kind of from memory, I'm guessing he was a long way down the grid.
Yeah, it was quite a while after. I think Hamilton was leaving the pits as he came in, so it was like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's strange.
Because when you saw nobody else come in, you were like, oh. And then my first, maybe they have closed the pit lane. And then the fact that he still came in was even more bizarre. But
You know, it gets quite confusing here because the pit lane eventually opened. So every other team who needed to pit came in and changed the tyres, went back out. So Carlos Sainz was sat in third place? I think it was second place.
Second, yeah.
And of course, he ended up going down to eighth because of other cars who hadn't come into the pits. Gasly came into the pits under normal racing conditions. So before the safety car and everything, changed onto hard tyres. So, of course, when everyone else came in the pits, he didn't need to. So he was straight up at the front as well. It's quite confusing, this, but this was the real factor. These two drivers, we had Gasly and Carlos Sainz, who in the end, who were fighting for the win after everything. Hamilton got penalties. I think we had the two Alfa Romeo sat in third and fourth for a while. Obviously, Giovinazzi got his penalty, so dropped to the back of the grid as well. Later on, but I mean, there was some, when that race restarted after the red flag, there was some good racing on offer, wasn't there?
Lads, we've just had some breaking news.
Oh.
Sergio Perez has just announced, just as we're recording this, that he will be leaving the team. He will not be taking part in Aston Martin next year.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
That is big, big news. Okay. You heard it here first, everybody. Literally, you heard it here first. Well, I've got to get this edited and uploaded tonight, but you will hear it here first if you haven't heard it anywhere else.
He's just put up a full statement saying, you know, after 7 years together, my time with the team will come to an end after this season. It hurts a bit as I bet on the team during very rough times. We managed to overcome obstacles, and I'm very proud of saving the jobs of several of my teammates. He says he doesn't have a plan B. His intention is to continue racing, but that would depend on finding a project that motivates me to continue giving my 100% in each lap. So, I mean, he was saying earlier in the season that he was going nowhere. That raises lots of questions, doesn't it?
Definitely, definitely right. We will come back to this, I think, because this is a big talking point. We'll come back into this later on with our latest news section. You can hear me typing. I'm going to write it down right now. Capital letters and an exclamation mark. That is down. So we will come back to that. We'll just finish up Monza. But yeah, that is big news coming out there. I can't even remember where we were, what we were talking about.
No, where were we?
So, yeah, the start of the second part of of Monza.
So, we, like Katie said earlier, tale of two races. Monza really was one. The first race and the first part of the race was kind of as you would expect. The second part, mayhem. And it was, as I said, midfield mayhem. Gasly in the AlphaTauri, Sainz in the McLaren. Now, I personally wanted Sainz to win. I wanted to see McLaren get a win. But you know what? Pierre Gasly, he won it, and he did brilliantly. He drove really well. I mean, I don't know if you also saw, but kind of he on the back straight towards Parabolica, he was weaving to break the slipstream for Sainz, make it difficult to follow. He is the first French winner since, do you guys know this?
96, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, do you remember the guy?
Oh, they mentioned it and I've forgotten.
Olivier Panis
at Monaco in the Ligier.
The Oracle Strikes like, Again.
Was that when three cars finished, wasn't it? Was that
something ridiculous? Damon was smashing it. He would have won it easy, but his car broke down. Eddie Irvine in Ferrari just went a bit crazy and seemed to crash into everyone, if I remember rightly, and then kind of span and I think he had to like reverse his car down the hill to jump start it or something. Stalled it in the pit lane as well. There was only a few cars that finished.
I think Johnny Herbert was on the podium, wasn't he? I think. And
yeah, for the Stewart. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's one of the few that actually finished.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But it seems mad that it's taken 24 years for another Frenchman to win. Obviously, Renault have had a bit of success during those years, but it seems mad, doesn't it?
I mean, the nearest we've come is Romain Grosjean getting on the podium. I think he's probably had a second and third, you know, a few seconds and third places.
Yes.
But Gasly won it.
Yeah. It was nice because actually Grosjean was like one of the first people to kind of come over and congratulate him. And there was some note about how he'd asked his engineer who'd won the race. And when they said it was Gasly, he was proper patriotically chuffed about that one. which was a nice thing to see because you forget that, you know, a lot of these drivers, there are some pockets from different countries and stuff, and it doesn't often come into play, but that was kind of a nice little bit of camaraderie.
Yeah, definitely. And to be honest, there were so many people. I mean, Charles Leclerc, he went over, gave him a pat on the back. And even the other guys, like Lewis Hamilton, obviously had his penalty. We should say he had an amazing fight back, finished in seventh place. I mean, even him, he was straight over, you know, congratulating Gasly. I think every single driver did. I think they're all pleased for him just to see a new win. And it really shows you actually how close those drivers are in the paddock.
Yeah, it's just, I imagine some of them are thinking, oh, that could have been me, a bit luck that day, but it's just a good news story, isn't it? And it's good for F1, and they kind of think, well, if it happened to him, it might happen to me one day. So positive. And sort of, he's had a crazy year, Pierre, he's sort of been demoted and then losing his best friend, Antoine Hubert, and he's had a really good season. So, and he also got a lot of luck this race, but he kind of deserved it because of his consistency this season. He's constantly in the top 10.
He seems to be steadily improving while the person who obviously replaced him, Alex Albon, seems to be in some weird kind of state of hellish limbo.
Yes.
It's an interesting contrast between the two. Their fortunes seem to have changed quite a lot in the past year from that position now at Belgium last year, where Alex was on the grid in a Red Bull, to it just wasn't the weekend for Red Bull generally. But no, good to see Gasly sort of up there and making the sport more exciting for people who are just sick of Hamilton. <top. laughs>
Did any of you make any predictions that the red flag bit of who was going to win?
I wanted Sainz. I was supporting Sainz. I thought he was going to do it. And to be honest, I mean, one more lap, Carlos probably would have done it because he was so close at the end there, wasn't he?
Ridiculous.
Yeah. I agree with you on Sainz. But he was even like that first part one of Monza. I think he was second, and he was comfortably second as well, wasn't he?
Yeah.
It was a hell of a weekend. And he's had the last three or four races, he's been really good. They came up, like, after the first few races, they came up that they had real struggles with his overheating of his engine, weren't they? And they couldn't see why, and it was exactly the same as Lando Norris's. I just thought it was an excuse they were using to boost his spirits. But they said they solved that. But since then, he's been really good, really quick. And I just wonder what he's feeling about next season.
Yeah, definitely. That could have been his one and only chance, for all we know, to win a Formula One race. So we'll see. I mean, obviously, Ferrari have got a lot to do. But you mentioned Red Bull, Katie. Now, I've got those down to talk about, because we had a message from Sam Todd, the awesome Sam Todd on Twitter. Thanks for getting in touch, Sam. It's always good to have someone to talk to about Formula One stuff. Mm-hmm. Now, Sam said, basically, he was talking about the Red Bull second seat. What do they do now?
Oh, what do they do? I mean, I love Albon. I get to write about him because he's our secret company. I know he's in the notebook, but I will always claim that's a secret. Much in the way we claim Ed Sheeran. But, you know, it's been a really tough season for him. He's been so up and down. But at some point, I can just see Christian Horner going, you know what, I've had my patience with you. It's time for you to buck up or move on. And I just can't see who's a good fit for that second seat, because the team's attention is kind of very much focused on Max. And you can see why. Max is a great driver, and he does produce results in a very difficult field most of the time. Barring this weekend, it was not a great track for them at Monza this weekend. But I don't know. I'm not quite sure what they're wanting. The problem is, I'm not sure what they're wanting to achieve with that second seat. Do you want someone who's incredibly close to Verstappen? Because that's what Albon's trying to be. But for whatever reason, you know, whether the car's not quite there or his driving style's not quite there, and I think it's probably the former rather than the latter. You know, he's not making that there. Do they want that, or do they just want a quiet second driver who will just toddle about and maybe finish mid-table or whatever? Because that's probably what he's being, but I don't think that's what they want. I'm not sure. It's hard to tell what Red Bull want.
It's very, very confusing. Now, I mean, Red Bull, they left the circuit very fast on Sunday. They kind of went to the press pen, answered some questions quickly and left. There was no real kind of message from the team saying, well done, Pierre Gasly, great to see our former driver. I mean, all the mechanics were out in the pit lane applauding him as he kind of came in. But, I mean, Red Bull, they were strangely very quiet. And I don't know if it's just me, but I didn't really hear anything from Christian Horner, which makes a change.
That's a good point, actually. I never really thought about that. But, yeah, normally, I remember when Vettel won 12 years ago there, and Red Bull were kind of jumping on board, really. And there's all, you know, it's our first victory for the Red Bull project and all this sort of stuff. So, but yeah, like I said, they were very quiet.
They had little to celebrate, I guess, in a sense, because, you know, it's great for Gasly, but Max not finishing, Alex barely finishing, you know. I think perhaps if Max and Alex had done better, if Max had kind of taken up his staple, like third place, they'd have been more up for that. But I don't know, perhaps it would have, there was sort of a message to say, let's not do this, because we're going to get asked questions over whether we made the right decision on Alex and not a position we want to talk about.
Yeah, definitely, that's very true.
I thought Verstappen looked very angry when he pulled in.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Because normally when you break down, they sort of push you in to the garage with the car. But he was so angry, but he just was so desperate to get out of the car.
This was the thing that really wound me up, because he was still going, he was still racing. they pulled him in and retired him, said, oh yeah, we can see an error on the screen, he's going to, you know, retire if we don't stop him. And it's like, well, he's going to retire if you do stop him. And it really winds me up, because I think you're just avoiding the problem. Why don't you just go and race? Because you know what these things are like. They say there's a problem and then it will be fine. Just sometimes you just got to go with it. Don't retire the guy unless there's unless the thing's blown up. That's my view. Just these engines, they wind me up.
We've said it before already. If Max is saying something, sometimes you just need to go and tell him, all right, lads, just get on with it. Because you can whine and complain all you like, but nearly always it's fine. Just get on with your job, Max. He's been told that several times this season already. Mainly Max.
Yeah, definitely. Now, one final thing we need to touch on from Monza. Something there's been a lot of talk about. Sam Todd again also asked us this on Twitter. Reverse grid races. What do we think? Go on, give me a yes or no answer, both of you. Carl, you go first, and then Katie, yes or no? For or against reverse grid?
I've been thinking about this long and hard, and I'm still edging towards no to reverse grids.
Yeah. Katie, what about you?
I've not thought about this as hard, but I think I'd like to see a reverse grid.
Now, this is the thing, because it's... They've been talking about it, obviously, from the second half of the Monza race, where it really was like a reverse grid, because you had midfield teams at the front and lots of, you know, kind of different people fighting for the win. Now, people are saying, you know, this shows reverse grids would work. I'm not so sure. I mean, it seems strange. I think it was Jack Nicholls, the commentator for 5 Live and Formula E. I think he still has Formula E, even though. But he was talking about it, and he said in the top six there was only there was very few overtakes. Basically, it's not worth it. Now, that's kind of true with the kind of DRS train you have going on. It's obviously makes it difficult to actually gain so much and overtake someone. But the other thing, if they're going to do reverse grids, then surely they have to do them at every single race. And could you imagine reverse grid at Monaco?
Is that, yeah? I mean, there's also talk of having a reverse grid race for qualifying as well, isn't there?
Yeah.
Which, but then, like Monaco, still have the same problems.
Yeah, if you go somewhere like Monaco where you can't really overtake, I mean, there's several other circuits. I mean, Spain, it's difficult to overtake as well. And that's a more conventional racetrack. I don't think it's going to make it any more exciting. I think you're almost just gifting wins to people for free. And one thing for me, it's just, why reward the guy who finishes 10th if they do it like they do in Formula 2, if you finish 10th or, you know, you then start on pole position for the reverse grid, why reward the guy who finishes 10th?
I think you want to test a range of skills. It's a way to test a range of skills within a driver, which I guess is why they do it at lower form. But I don't know. I think there are drivers who it wouldn't matter whether they were on reverse grid or not. They would still manage to kind of bubble back up to the top. You know, we watched Hamilton on a run. We've seen Max do several runs over the years where he's qualified really low. Alex as well, actually, and managed to make their way right up back to the front. So people saying it would, I don't think it would benefit as many drivers as people think. We watched Kimi, for example, just kind of, you know, he was up at the top pretty much soon after the start and then just gradually drift down again. I think there would be that element of settling as well. But I think you have to kind of look perhaps behind the reasons why people are saying they want this change and they want this difference. And it's because, and you know, it's because he's so fantastic. It's his Hamilton dominance that's turning a lot of people off. Like, well, why do I bother watching the race? I know what the result's going to be. And that's because he's such a good driver. But it doesn't bring that kind of element of, not knowing what's going to happen next. There's been a certain inevitability, especially with the dropping back of Ferrari this season. And I can see why people are calling for it.
I suppose they did have the chance, didn't they, at Silverstone, second Silverstone race and the second Austrian race, which obviously you at least test it. But I'm just they've put a lot on this new car coming in 2022 now, isn't it? And I kind of, if that doesn't work, then maybe we need to do something. If cars still can't follow that closely, then we do need to maybe look at it. But I'm just kind of, maybe just wait until then. I know next year might be very similar. That's huge Mercedes domination, but I think just hang on a little bit. I'm just worried that you will get people win Grand Prix that don't quite deserve to win Grand Prix. And also, I really like qualifying as well.
Yeah.
I mean, qualifying's really cool. And I love the knockout bit of that. And I'd miss that as well if that went. But
yeah, definitely.
Maybe if you know, all's done and sorted for Abu Dhabi or something, then maybe we could try something there.
Definitely. Hopefully they'll figure it all out. But if you're listening and you've got your opinions and you want to share them with us, do so. There's loads of ways you can get in touch with us here at the NRF1 podcast. Best place to start is Patreon. Go to patreon.com/NRF1. That's Patreon. You'll find the full edition of this podcast, which will include our Of the Weekend Awards, the Norfolk Notebook, and the NRF1 Pit Stops. And if you're listening to us right now on Patreon, then those are on their way. And thank you as ever for your support. It really means a lot to us. And we hope to bring you more exclusives very soon. Other ways to get in touch, social media. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. The handle for all three is @thenrf1. And you can email us as well. That address is nrf1podcast@gmail.com. And if you're on Twitch, give us a follow on there. Just search TheNRF1. That's all one word, and give us a follow, and you'll be able to catch up with some of our live podcasts that we do every now and again.
Hello, everyone. This is Jake Humphrey here. You're listening to the best Formula One podcast from the best county in the world, the NRF1 podcast. And I wasn't paid any money to say that.
No, I did give you some beers.
Cool. Okay, so we should move on. We should discuss all the latest major F1 news. So we've already, brought an exclusive. I'm probably not allowed to say that because we've already said about Sergio Perez. Sergio Perez has announced he is not staying at Racing Point next year. There's not really much point of having a vote for this, but yes or no, do you think Vettel's is going to go in there?
Yes.
100%. I'm if this news would have happened like 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, I'd been okay, it makes sense. But it's all gone very quiet on the whole Vettel rumours. I was starting to think that Vettel was just going to leave the sport. But a little bit surprised that that's come out tonight.
Because we've been talking about Vexit for a while. Yeah. And I think last time I was on here, I was saying how the narrative seemed to be changing around Vexit. Because for a while it was, he's leaving. Then it was, he's going to find a team. And then, like you said, for a while it just gone back to, no, there's nowhere's going to take him. This is the end of his F1 career. And now this has happened, and the narrative is probably going to change again. I've just had a brief look through Twitter, and Vettel's trending. Haas is trending, interestingly, as well, where everyone reckons that'll be where Perez goes next. But he's got to go there, isn't he? It makes sense. Yeah. That's a car that's doing well, the pink Mercedes and all that.
Yeah. But I mean, are you guys pleased to see him race or?
Yeah, I didn't really. The more the season goes on, the more you don't want him to leave F1 after this season. It's just been a horrible season and there's a horrible divorce between him and Ferrari. And yeah, if he has 1 year at Aston Martin, I imagine it will be more. Just to sort of. An old style Sebastian Vettel victory, just to look back on before, and if he does retire, because he's won four world championships, and it's very rare to win a world championship. The fact he's won four, he's a legend of the sport, and just this year would be a horrible year to go out on. And also, I think it'd be good for. I think he'll get a bit of a boost and change of scenery, and that might do him good, and hopefully we'll see some of the old Vettel.
Yeah, definitely. And some of the other news, which we kind of already previously mentioned, was Renault. Now, they're becoming... Is it Alpine or Alpine?
It's Alpine, isn't it?
I have no idea. But we'll go with that because you know that we love our pronunciations here at the NRF1 podcast, as is proven by Renault driver Daniel Ricciardo. But, yeah, Renault, Alpine, Alpine. We'll go with Alpine.
Alpine, yeah, with a French zhuzh on it.
So they're going to be racing in the red, white and blue next year. So going to be interesting to see how they do, whether it's just a name change or if anything major actually happens to the team.
I'm quite disappointed to lose the yellow.
Yes.
I've got to say, because it's great when these teams have different coloured cars. So you can tell when you see your McLarens out in orange, it's like, those are the McLarens. It's like the Renaults are out in yellow. Those are the Renaults. Because sometimes when they're going past at these stupid speeds and all you see is a bit of red or a bit of blue, you're like, now was that an AlphaTauri? Was that a red? What was that?
Yeah.
I'd petition for more F1 teams to have vastly different colours. I think we're going to get that with Aston Martin possibly next.
I hope so. I could see a nice British racing green on the Aston Martin. Yes.
Well up for that. But petition for maybe some more white cars back or, I don't know, just different, more striking colours. Because otherwise it's just going to be left with like a very bluey, reddy grid and then McLaren.
Yeah, definitely. I also love the bright colours. It reminds me of Formula One in kind of the late 90s when it was almost anything goes. I mean, just looking at the BAR team that raced.
That was cool, yeah. But it hasn't brought that back. Maybe that's what they should have done. They should have half the car sort of French flag colours and then the other half yellow and black.
Well, Mercedes kind of did that, didn't they, with their... at the German Grand Prix last year, having the front of their car white, kind of going into their usual colours. It didn't go so well for them that race, so I don't think anyone wants to do it anytime soon.
And all the fancy dress as well. Whatever.
Oh, yeah. But speaking of car colours and liveries, Ferrari have launched a special livery for their 1,000th Grand Prix at Mugello. They're going to be red. But a different shade of red. They're going kind of burgundy red, very old school. I mean, we've all seen the pictures. Do you guys like it?
I like it. I think
it'll look good on track.
Yes, I think it will look good on track. It's different. It's not going to change the fortunes. I hope for the best.
It will distract us from criticising them on track. So.
That's Binotto's plan.
That's what it is.
In fact, they're a little bit slower. It's a little bit easier to see as well, than the strain. That's what they had to do something for the 1,000th race. But it's kind of epic. Sounds tough, but pretty crap. But at least you get some points. I think that'll be positive this weekend.
Yeah, definitely. And the other kind of big news that broke over the weekend, the Williams family, they're leaving the team. So Frank and Claire Williams stand down. They've been in the sport for many years. Guys, are you guys sad to see them go? Do you think it's about time? And what does the future hold for Williams?
I think it's sad to see them go. I think, it's nice to kind of have that family kind of atmosphere around F1. It's, they've been very public about how things have been for them in the past few years, if you've seen the Netflix documentary.
Yeah.
I think, having that family element in a sport that can often feel very corporate in some ways, was that nice difference. Obviously, Frank Williams is a legend of the sport. And, he's obviously not been in the best of health or whatever. And Claire's become this sort of strong female face on the pit wall as well. And, you don't see many of those. And there haven't been many of those kind of very prominent female faces in the pit, which, from my perspective, is really important to show that this isn't just a race full of men run by men for men. And so I'm definitely going to miss that.
Yeah, absolutely. I really agree with that. Actually, that's something that we don't see very often. I remember, I think it was Manisha Kaltenbaum, I think was her name, at Sauber, kind of early 2010s. And her and Claire Williams are the only two women I can think of who have been as a team principal or team leader role for a Formula One team. So it's been really nice to see that. And there's a video that I always really like. It was of, I think it's still on YouTube, but it was Frank Williams and Lewis Hamilton.
Yes.
And yeah, Lewis driving Frank around Silverstone in a Mercedes road car. And you can see Frank Williams, his face lights up when he's going. And there's a really nice bit in there where they basically say, okay, you've got one lap, go for it. And Frank asks, did you say we've only got one lap? And they said, yeah. And you can see his face kind of drop. He's a bit sad, like, I've only got one lap to go out on the car. You know, I'd love more. But Lewis being Lewis was just like, screw this, we'll go for another one. And you can see, even though Frank is his body might have not been the same condition as it once was, but he's not lost any of those racing instincts. It's such a nice video to see.
There's a nice moment in it where Claire sticks her head through the window and goes, right, you've got a lap to drive.
Yeah.
It was a nice little touch.
Yeah, it really is. And it shows you actually how well-liked this guy is and the family are across the grid. And I think there were some really nice tributes to the team over the weekend. And, it's a shame they're going to be leaving. But I'm sure that their legacy will live on.
Yeah, it's just a bit of a... Obviously, the Williams name is there, but it does lose a little bit of it, doesn't it? But
yeah.
But, you know, it kind of depends who this consortium decides to appoint to lead it, in a way.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, who could they get back and... bring in.
There's all sorts of rumours, isn't there? Even like Ron Dennis to come back, which I thought an interesting approach. Hopefully they get somebody good and they've got the best interests. Because Williams is a huge team, isn't it? And especially from a British motorsport point of view, you know, my first memories of a Mansell winning in the 92 car, and which I think Vettel's just bought, isn't he?
Yeah, he has actually.
Yeah, and then obviously you know Damon Hill and. Yeah, there's just they're a huge part of the sport, and hopefully they're in good hands now.
Yeah, definitely. And to be honest, whoever they put in charge, as long as it's not Flavio Briatore, I'm pretty happy.
With joint team principals, Flavio Briatore and Ron Dennis.
That'd be good fun. Gosh, that'd be a car crash. Right, I think that's all the latest news wrapped up, at least. So time has really got on and carried away.
Oh, wow.
But we should definitely we do need to touch on Mugello, Italy Part 2, the Tuscan Grand Prix. I think it's the Tuscan Grand Prix, they're calling it Tuscany Grand Prix.
Yeah.
Italy Part 2 is what I'm calling it. So
yeah.
The 1,000th Grand Prix for Ferrari. Most important weekend four. Have we already answered that, do you think?
I think we kind of have, haven't we?
it's
a team in dark red.
Yeah, their home race. It's they've got to pull something out here, haven't they?
Yeah.
The likelihood of pulling it though, probably not.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting.
Like I said before, I think the points would just be good for them, wouldn't it? Just you know. If they finish 7th and 8th or 8th and 9th, decent race. But yeah. I mean, it should suit them more than the last two races. But it's just a tough watch.
Yeah, definitely. Now, it's obviously a new circuit for Formula One. I haven't really seen the racetrack in any other form of motorsport. Have you guys?
It's a MotoGP track, isn't it?
Yes.
I've watched it, but it's a MotoGP track usually.
Yeah, I've seen MotoGP there, and it's probably one of the best tracks on the grid.
Yeah, MotoGP. Do you think it will suit Formula One? Do you think this could be a good race? What are your expectations from it?
I'm not sure if it'll create good racing. It'll be good to see him go around because very up and down and flowing corners, and it'll be mega to see him go around. It's quite a long straight, which could lead to overtaking.
That's not going to suit the Ferrari at all.
No. There's a bit
There's
a few more corners. Sorry, go on, Katie.
Sorry, Lando Norris was joking in streaming the other day. He was playing a video game with Charles, and he said if Charles was leading, I think it was from the start in Belgium, by the time he got to the end of the first straight, he'd be at the back.
Yeah, I think I saw a clip of this as well, actually. That was classic Lando, as we're finding out.
he's winding up Danny Rick as well, wasn't he?
Oh, he always is.
He hasn't made an overtake since he's left Red Bull. Or
yeah,
yeah.
He's making a lot of friends on the grid, I think, Lando.
Yeah, good old Lando.
Just by having a bit of fun with him, so it's great to see.
But back to Mugello. But it's an amazing track. I don't know if it'll create good racing, but we mega to see the cars go around there, and it does look an amazing part of the world.
Yeah, so I'm expecting to see some. Pretty impressive landscape shots. Now, this is quite a few years ago, I went on holiday to Florence, and it was an amazing city. I mean, the hillside around it was pretty impressive as well. And this circuit, I understand, is not too far north of the city of Florence. So I'm expecting to see some nice helicopter shots in the build up, no doubt, just after they do the music, which is going to be great. But do you think this could be here to stay on the F1 grid, or do you think it's a one off?
I think it's one off unless we're in a similar situation to how we are now next year, and it's been a kind of a proven concept, if it were, because obviously this is a time to experiment and try with tracks that we've not either tried for a long time, like Turkey, or you know, something that's completely new, and it could prove a really good leveler because there isn't so much data or sort of pure experience, I guess, from the driver's perspective. But you know, there are tried and tested, you know, tracks with F1. It could be that they start putting it on, if it proves, you know, particularly good watch, put it on kind of rotation for the Italian Grand Prix. I don't know. It'd be an interesting idea.
Yeah, one of those European Grand Prix that occasionally pop up. Maybe they could all these new tracks, you know, the Portimao, Turkey, and Imola and Mugello, they could sort of, after the season, when we get back to normal, hopefully, if that ever happens, that they could sort of like, if they're good racers, you can sort of rotate them maybe in future years.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to seeing what the circuit is like and what's in store. And I mean, a new Formula One race, it can only be brilliant for us. Unpredictable. So, as it's unpredictable, you guys want to make any predictions?
I'm going to go for Bottas win. I thought that.
Oh, shout. Turn a fortune to him. Katie, you got any predictions you want to make?
I think Charles Leclerc will come 10th and score Ferrari a solitary point. And I think that's the best they can hope for.
Crack open the champagne.
Oh, mad. I'm going to go for a Daniel Ricciardo podium.
Ooh.
I don't know why, but yeah, I'm doing it. I stand now. So yeah,
you summoned the tattoo.
exactly. And on that, I think we are done. I think that is everything wrapped up. But we will return with E268, which will be our review of Mugello. And if all goes to plan, that will hopefully be with you next week, maybe the week after. I'm sure everyone can appreciate, with the races coming so thick and fast, it really has been quite a challenge to get all these podcasts turned around in good time. So please forgive us if they reach you late, and thank you for bearing with us. But in the meantime, thanks to Kyle and Katie.
Thank you.
Yeah, cheers.
No, thank you for being on. It's been great. This has been the NRF1 podcast, and we will see you next time. Until then, goodbye.